Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, our mission is to cut through the noise, to really get to the heart of a document that has already started reordering geopolitical calculations this year.
We're talking about the newest U.S. national security strategy, the NSS.
Exactly. And if you're expecting, you know, the usual bureaucratic document full of predictable policy language, you are going to be shocked.
Yeah, this is not about subtle shifts in wording. Mm-mm. We're talking about a fundamental, a tectonic shift in how Washington sees its role in the world.
Absolutely. We've been going through all the analysis, and the hook, the absolute most critical feature, is a shocking omission. Mm-hmm. For more than a decade, everything the U.S. did, defense budgets, alliances, resource allocation, it was all defined by one thing. Great power competition.
Yeah.
GPC.
Right. China as the pacing challenge, Russia as the acute threat. Competition was the whole game.
And that entire framework, it's gone.
Zhanning.
Yeah.
Absent. Not softened, not reworded for political sensitivity. It has been functionally vaporized from the document.
Okay, so let's unpack this. GPC was the entire scaffolding of global policy. If you just take away the scaffolding, what replaces that foundation?
Well, that's the thing.
Because according to our sources, that omission has landed with a dramatic thud among allies and adversaries. It signals a massive break, not just a pivot. It's creating dismay, confusion, quiet alarm.
And what replaces it is something Washington spent years, maybe decades, trying to pretend it had evolved beyond.
Which is?
Realism. Realism without apology.
That's a fascinating way to put it. Almost cynical. The U.S. spent all that time trying to export democracy and universal values as its strategic currency. What does realism without apology even look like in policy?
It means the NSS openly embraces this perspective. You know, the influence of larger, richer, and stronger nations is a timeless truth.
So a retreat from ideology.
A complete retreat from universal ideology and a return to raw power dynamics.
Yep.
Washington is explicitly rejecting the idea of seeking global domination. Instead, it's focusing on establishing balances of power regionally and globally.
So the goal isn't to be everywhere all the time.
No. The goal is stability through established influence.
That is a profound shift. And if you're not trying to dominate everywhere, then you have to prioritize. You have to be brutally efficient with geography. Where does this new strategy start?
Home. Home comes first. The Western Hemisphere is the undisputed geographic priority number one. The document basically treats stability in the near abroad as the absolute prerequisite for any global action.
So a heavy, heavy focus on America's own backyard. Our sources are calling this the Monroe Doctrine without the sermon.
That phrase just nails it, doesn't it?
It really does. It encapsulates the change. No more high-minded talk about partnership. It's just about control.
Precisely. It's about influence, exclusion, and control. The strategic goals are all about keeping rivals out of the near abroad and protecting critical flows. We're talking sea lanes, energy, migration routes.
Internal stability across the whole hemisphere.
Yes. And what's critical here is how it elevates foreign footholds in Latin America and the Caribbean. They're no longer, you know, secondary diplomatic problems. They're strategic threats. They have to be countered proactively. It's a laser focus on making sure the backyard is secure.
That makes a lot of pragmatic sense. So if the hemisphere is priority one, where does the unavoidable competition with China fit in? That has to be the Indo-Pacific.
The Indo-Pacific is geographic priority number two. It's described as the decisive region.
Decisive.
And while the NSS uses this very restrained language, China is still the pacing threat in everything but name. The whole strategy acknowledges that the future balance of global power gets decided right there.
And within that theater, Taiwan is still the fulcrum. But the rationale for defending Taiwan seems to have undergone this quiet but really crucial shift. It used to be framed ideologically, right? Defending democracy.
Right.
If GPC and ideology are gone, what's the core rationale for deterrence now?
It's pure, cold-eyed calculation of risk. It's focused entirely on global economics and industrial capacity.
So not ideals, but interests.
Exactly. The document makes it clear the primary reason for deterrence regarding Taiwan is preventing a war that would fundamentally shatter the global economy, a war that would test the industrial base of the United States and its allies to, well, to destruction.
So the quiet realization is that the integrity of our supply chains, our capacity to mass produce material, that stuff matters more than, quote, elegant theories of political alignment. That's a huge admission of vulnerability, isn't it?
It is. It's a very pragmatic assessment. It recognizes that America's ability to project power rests, ultimately, on its ability to manufacture and supply. The new logic is We deter a war over Taiwan not because of what it represents politically, but because of what failure would mean economically and industrially.
Okay, that tracks for the two key geographic priorities. But this is where the strategy breaks so sharply from everything we've known. This is where the diplomatic pain really begins.
You're talking about Europe.
The section on Europe seems to be causing massive heartburn. It's getting the bulk of the negative mention in our sources.
Well, it's far more than just deprioritization. The source material we have suggests the NSS doesn't just reduce focus on Europe, it delivers an outright rebuke.
A rebuke. In a national security document, that word is, it's incredibly strong. Why is the reaction so acute? What specifically is causing this dismay in Brussels and Berlin?
The reaction stems from the document's tone, specifically language that criticizes Europe for having, and this is a quote, broken faith with a shared cultural and even spiritual heritage.
Wait, spiritual heritage?
Yes. And that is not the language of strategic analysis. That is civilizational judgment. For allies who are used to being the core of America's defensive project, this reads like a profound accusation. Not tough love about defense spending.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. Why on earth would you bring spiritual heritage into a policy directive? It sounds so esoteric. It sounds like diplomatic malpractice for a security document.
It creates this massive sense of conditionality. Allies expected the GTC framework to bind them tightly together against Russia. They thought it would justify the post-Cold War security architecture.
And instead?
Instead, they find a document that questions the fundamental cultural and moral underpinnings of the alliance itself. They were looking for solidarity against an enemy, and they found skepticism about their own internal commitments.
So the confusion factor must be monumental. Allies expected renewed commitment to competition, but they got this sudden pivot to, what, management?
Exactly. They found a document that treats China merely as an economic relationship to be rebalanced. A competitive partner, not some existential threat.
And Russia?
Russia is just a problem to be managed. Our commitment to European defense, while it's implied, is now framed as no longer sacred. They're even quietly discouraging further NATO enlargement. It signals a belief that the alliance has, you know, reaches its natural limits.
That completely explains the question that's echoing across European capitals. What game are we playing now? If we're not competing, what are we doing? And how deep does the commitment actually go?
We're managing relationships. That's a key concept in this new realism. But management, when an adversary hears it, can often sound a lot like tolerance.
Which brings us to the most uncomfortable reactions of all.
The ones coming from Moscow.
Russia apparently read this document and welcomed it. Openly. The Kremlin must be delighted.
They were. Moscow openly welcomed the strategy. They saw it as largely consistent with their own long-standing vision for the world.
And from their perspective, I imagine it validates their core goals.
Several of them. An end to further NATO enlargement, a gradual weakening of America's commitment to Europe, and most importantly, the normalization of spheres of influence. If the U.S. is focusing on its own hemisphere, well, that implies a tacit acceptance that Russia can pursue its own regional security goals.
That's alarming enough for allies, but I saw one specific line in the NSS that must be truly chilling for them. The part that calls for cultivating resistance to Europe's current trajectory within European nations.
This phrase is maybe the most troubling element of the whole thing because of how differently it can be interpreted. In Washington, the administration might frame this as just, you know, acknowledging political diversity.
Recognizing that not everyone agrees with Brussels.
Right. The right of nations to pursue their own paths. But our sources are pretty clear on this next point.
Moscow hears permission.
Absolutely. Moscow interprets it as U.S. tolerance, maybe even encouragement, for the very same nationalist and populist movements that Russia actively supports to fracture European unity.
To undermine the EU and NATO from within.
It's a gift-wrapped opportunity. When the White House is trying to be candid about geopolitical limits, Moscow just hears a green light for fragmentation.
So the shift is so massive and the consequences so immediate, it triggered a very loud, very sudden reaction from the domestic political system. Let's talk about Congress hitting the brakes.
This is where the checks and balances come into stark relief. Just days after this NSS was rolled out, Congress passed a nearly $900 billion defense bill.
And this bill acts as a direct legal countermeasure to the tone of the NSS.
To the tone and the implied drawdowns, yes.
How can a legal mechanism actually counter a strategic doctrine from the executive branch?
Well, Congress controls the power of the purse and the physical movement of troops. This defense bill explicitly prevents any major U.S. troop drawdowns in Europe. It legally locks in America's leadership role in NATO, and it reinforces the forward posture of military assets.
So on paper, it looks like a flat contradiction between the administration and Capitol Hill.
It does, but the analysis suggests it was actually a necessary stabilizing mechanism. It's a shock absorber.
Shock absorber? I like that.
It's a legal shock absorber. It's intentionally designed to contain the risks of this really rapid doctrinal shift. Congress understands that allies panic when narratives change this fast.
And they remember that blurring deterrence with ambiguity is the fastest way to invite miscalculation from an adversary.
That's it. The bill essentially says, while our political conversation about Europe is changing, our physical commitment is legally locked in place.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, Congress is trying to make sure the bridge doesn't collapse while we're still mid-crossing. They're locking in the physical posture, the legal commitment, even as the White House doctrine is changing the whole narrative from competition to realism and management.
That's the perfect summary. They're containing the risks of the doctrinal break to ensure stability in the most volatile regions. They aren't rejecting the new worldview entirely. They're just making sure that the practical consequences of ambiguity don't lead to immediate deterrence failures.
Let's summarize the massive gamble the NSS is making here. It's built on these core assumptions that just break so sharply from the past decade.
The core bet is really threefold. First, that downplaying competition will actually reduce global escalation.
Okay.
Second, that managing relationships is inherently safer than constantly contesting them. And third, that acknowledging spheres of influence implicitly for the U.S. and the Western Hemisphere and others elsewhere will stabilize the international system.
Those are enormous assumptions, and they're already having consequences based on the feedback we've seen.
They absolutely are. Allies hear distance and judgment where they expected solidarity. Adversaries hear acceptance and opportunity where they expected firm resistance.
And everyone, globally, hears this profound uncertainty about what exactly replaces the competition framework that structured the last 10 years.
The reality is America has to choose its focus. The hemisphere matters deeply. And the Pacific is decisive. There's no doubt about that.
But Europe, despite the perceived rebuke, is where this ambiguity gets tested first.
It is. Our sources note that Moscow is already probing the seams of European unity and NATO commitment directly because of the language in this strategy. This isn't just high-level theory anymore. It's being translated into real-world actions.
So what does this all mean? We are still at the opening chapter of this massive doctrinal break. We've seen the outright rejection of GPC, the return to a hard realism focused on the Western Hemisphere, and this strategic recalibration away from Europe.
It's forcing allies to wonder if this is just an adjustment, a recalibration, or the beginning of something much colder, a more transactional era of security.
It's a stark reminder that these strategic documents stop being just documents the moment they start being measured in real-world consequences.
And in adversarial interpretations.
Which leads to a final, provocative thought for you to consider. The source material noted that wars are often lost when leaders convince themselves that their own restraint will be interpreted by others as goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
Given this new NSS relies so heavily on restraint and management, attempting to de-escalate by downplaying competition, you have to ask, how will adversaries choose to interpret this massive shift? Will they see it as prudence, as a move towards stabilization? Or will they see an opportunity and interpret it as weakness? That difference will determine whether this strategy stabilizes the world or just accelerates instability.
You keep watching the actions, not just the documents.
Wise words. Thank you for joining us for the Deep Dive.